Welcome to Nancy's Bookshelf, a weekly program of conversations with regional and national writers from North State Public Radio. Now, here's your host, Nancy Wigman.
The hairdresser Avdana, Princess of Wales, has co-authored a book about the princess, along with the curator of the Princess Diana Museum. Their book is all about the hair, My Decade with Her Royal Highness, Princess of Wales. And here's my first guest, Richard Dalton.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I've been a hairdresser all my life, I suppose. I met Princess Diana when she was 17 in Bond Street in the salon in London. And I used to do her sister's hair, Lady Sarah, Lady Jane, and Diana would come in on her vacations from school in Switzerland. And that's when I first met her, and she was 17.
Yeah, she was only 17 years old. But you were already working as a hairdresser when she came in to seek your services.
Oh, yeah. I was managing a salon in Bond Street in London. And Sarah and Jane, her sisters, worked around the corner in Vogue in Hanover Square. But then I went in, you know, obviously as years went on, I did her mother and brother and all the family.
Well, you were pretty young yourself. How old were you when you first cut Diana's hair?
Oh, well, I started hairdressing at the age of 15.
Yes.
As soon as I left school. And, you know, I don't know, I must have been, well, I'm actually the same age as Prince Charles, but don't say that.
Okay, we won't.
You can do, actually. But, yeah, you know, I must have been probably in 30 somewhere.
So you knew at age 15 what you wanted to do with your life, and you got started.
Absolutely.
And in walks a teenage Princess of Wales. You cut her hair, and then that was a long time ago that she died. But you
have 27 years.
And your book, this memoir, it's a photo book memoir. It's all about the hair. Is full of such wonderful stories. I just loved reading the stories of the time you spent with Lady Diana. And you mentioned in your book that she had an ability to light a room with a smile.
And, oh, totally. You knew she was in the room even if you didn't turn around. It was just, I don't know, she was magnetic. Unreal atmosphere whenever she walked in.
And you said
One of the stories I heard was a Four Seasons restaurant in New York. It's like extremely noisy. I mean, any time I've gone there at lunchtime, especially, it's all people shouting and screaming at each other. Mm-hmm. And in the restaurant, suddenly it went deathly silent. And it was when Diana walked into the room. And that was quite something.
My guest is Richard Dalton. He is a hairdresser, and he is co-author of a memoir, It's All About the Hair, My Decade with Her Royal Highness, Princess of Wales. And you didn't call her Diana. What did you call her, Richard?
Your Royal Highness.
Your Royal
Highness. Obviously, if I was doing Nancy's hair, it'd be Nancy, and you know, you're not feeling too good, let's go out for a drink. You couldn't do that with Princess Diana. And every morning, as soon as I saw her coming in the door, I would stand to attention, bow, and say, good morning, Your Royal Highness. Because she was who she was. And if, you know, hi, Lady Di, or whatever, people are known to tell you, you just didn't do that. It was respect for her and also respect for anybody else with an earshot and say, be getting stabbed in the back. So.
Well, and at one point, she refers to you as her best friend.
So, that's correct, yeah.
And we get to see that when we're reading your book, why she would consider you her best friend, and yet you had to be very polite when you were addressing her.
Well, I saw her every day. You know, it wasn't just, have your hair done once a month. I saw her every morning for a decade, longer.
Well, I would like to introduce now the co-author of It's All About the Hair, and her name is Renee Plant. She is director and curator of an award-winning virtual and interactive Princess Diana Museum and creator of the Princess and the Platypus Foundation, and that's a nonprofit that raises funds for children's charities. Renee Plant was recognized for her charity work in child education by the U.S. Congress and honored as a 28th Congressional District Woman of the Year. So she is the co-author of this memoir, It's All About the Hair. Renee Plant, welcome.
Good morning, Nancy. Thank you so much for having Richard and I this morning. We're so excited to be here.
Well, how did a 12-year-old Australian meet Princess Diana?
Oh my gosh, it was a pinchable moment. I was one of those kids. I grew up in Australia in a very small town called Yamundi, and I watched the wedding in 1981, and I fell in love with Diana that day. Like, who doesn't love, you know, a princess and a royal story and the whole romance behind that? So it was 1983, and it was the royal tour where Prince Charles and Lady Di came out with Prince William, and it was a really big deal because they flew on the same plane with Prince William, and I thought then it was so bold of her to be able to go up against, you know, the traditional royal protocols in a way and bring her son on that same plane. But it was the kids come out to meet royalty tour. And so our school got on a field trip. So off we went and, you know, everyone was lining along the path to meet her. And I had a little tiny pocket camera with me that Santa Claus had given me that Christmas. I was snapping photos. She stood right in front of me. They go inside to have lunch and learn how ginger was made at the factory. And I snuck away from my school and I'm behind the shed taking photos of her feet, anything I could do to get a glimpse of her. And as an hour goes by and they're doing roll call and where's Renee? I'm missing. I was MIA and I got into so much trouble when I got back to school, but it was so worth it. She comes out on my side and it was all a line of paparazzi. And she was, you know, in the days when Charles and Di were on each other's side, you remember there was like a part where, oh, Charles is on the side. No one wanted to be on that side, you know, of the path. He made a joke of it, you know, those back then. And luckily she was on my side. So she presents herself right in front of me. I remember looking up because she was so tall and I just was speechless for the first time in my entire life. I couldn't speak. And I reach up, she shakes my hand, but she didn't just shake my hand. She looked me in the eyes. And at that moment, she made me feel like I'd known her forever. She had this magnetic, like, gift to be able to, like, just make you feel like you'd known her. And she didn't just move along and, you know, just brush along. It was just really, really special moment. It's so hard. Like, it takes me back there every time I talk about it. And that wasn't enough. So now I'm speechless. Now that she's finally walked on, now I'm behind the barricade and I'm walking behind the royal procession. And a friend of mine goes, Lady Di's dropped something in the dirt. And I bend down and I pick up this tiny, tiny clay platypus. And I pick it up and I'm like, oh my gosh. And I try to run over to return it to her. And I ran over to a policeman. I said, Lady Di dropped this. And he looked at me, he looked at the platypus in my hand, he looked at the big car and he went, closed my hand. He said, she must have dropped it to give it to you. And I went, oh my gosh. And with that, I held it in my hand all day. I got into trouble when I went back to school. but 35 years later, that little tiny clay platypus is what caused me to be, you know, inspired to do the Princess and the Platypus Foundation. 35 years later. So that little moment, you know, back in 1983, Richard was just on that tour that day. He did her hair that morning. So to flip it all full circle is kind of funny, like, you know, 35 years later, Richard.
My guest is Renee Plant, and she is curator of the Princess Diana Museum and creator of the Princess and the Platypus Foundation. Now, I first read that about your creator, a foundation called Platypus. So I thought, well, what's the story there? Yeah. And you, in this book, has beautiful color photographs. There's a photograph of this little platypus, but right beside it is something interesting that you include throughout your book and explain how people can use this extra information, Renee.
Yes. So over the past 10 years, I've curated the Princess Diana Museum. When Diana died, I felt like all of her artifacts, her historical pieces were being scattered all around the world, aimlessly to the highest bidder. And it really didn't do her justice of her life, her legacy, her contribution to the world. And so I have made it a mission of mine through the foundation to acquire all of her historical artifacts one by one, meticulously over the last 10 years. And we have over, I think, 2,700 items at the moment in the museum. They've all been shot in 3D, so you can actually enter the museum anywhere around the world at any time and then go and see all the pieces of history that she's had, like the black sheep sweater that she wore in 1983, yes. The Versace dress that was famously worn, you know, with Patrick de Mercier-Elier on the cover of Vogue the year she died. So these little QR codes are presented in the book all the way through. There's about 100 of them. And as Richard tells a story, he'll talk about her hair. And if there's an item that is actually in the museum, like there's a pair of earrings on page 177 that were a gift from the Queen, and they're pearl and diamond earrings. And there's a QR code there because we have those earrings in the museum. And so it's an interactive experience for the reader to be able to go through this book. It's kind of like a historical artifact, actually, like, you know, repository of all these, you know, beautiful, beautiful stories. So it's kind of like an archival piece to preserve history with Diana and Richard's stories as well, and all the pieces that she's worn.
So we turn a page and we see this QR code and think, I'd like to know more about, say, the platypus, or I'd like to know more about those earrings. Then we just whip out our phone and read
and
the
click
QR
on it.
Code. Yeah.
So, yeah, a funny story. On page 21, there's a picture, if you're on page 21.
I happen to have my book open at that very page.
Oh, okay, great. So that's the day I met Diana in Sydney, Australia. And you can see my hand. She's reaching up to shake my hand again. But the really cool thing about at the bottom of the page are these beautiful Ferragamo purple pumps that she was wearing the day that I met her. And they're actually in the museum, and there's a QR code right next to that, so you can actually learn more about the shoes and the day I met her in Sydney.
And this happened to have been 1988, because you first met her when you were 12 years old in 83, and then you met her in Sydney in 1988.
To meet a princess twice is pretty, pretty remarkable in your life, especially when you live on the other side of the world all the way down under. It's like it's a gift come true, honestly. Yeah. But she had that gift literally to make people feel that they're connected. You know, I've done over 50 interviews with people that have worked with Diana, including Richard, obviously, and we co-authored the book together. But everyone that I've ever interviewed said she had this kindness, this compassion, the touch of her hand, the glimpse, you know, it's just all these things that she knew that she had this ability to really connect people, you know, just by her presence and a touch and a glance. She was just magnetic.
And you say it would be unusual enough to meet her once, but you say in your book, she was my destiny.
Yeah, when you say that, I kind of get teary because it kind of, when you spend so long working on something that, sorry, didn't know I'd get emotional, but it's been a labor of love, it really has.
And when you said fate had brought us together again, I knew then that my mission was to celebrate her life for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
And I understand that. When I met my husband, I knew that my destiny was to spend the rest of my life with the rest of his life.
Right.
And so I can see why that would be emotional.
Yeah. Yeah. And then to kind of meet Richard, just to bring it back to Richard again, like to meet him 10 years ago, we've been friends for over a decade now too, haven't we, Richard? And we met on the Queen Mary. This is a funny story. You know, everyone knows I love Diana. So we went down to the Queen Mary because Richard was doing a talk down there 10 years ago. Not 2014 it was, so maybe 11 now. And I was in the audience and he does his talk about all the fabulous stories about meeting Diana and whatnot. And I have this question and I say, excuse me, Richard, I'm Renee. Could you tell me what it was like washing Princess Di's hair in your kitchen sink? And his eyes opened and it was like, what? How do you know that? And that's how our friendship started. And we had a mutual friend. And, yeah, we became really good friends over the course of 10 years. And to actually have Richard be able to trust me enough to preserve his story, because he has had many opportunities to do so with other people but didn't trust anybody. And so it's been a huge privilege to work with him to be able to preserve his stories, you know, in this way.
My guests are hairdresser Richard Dalton and museum curator Renee Plant. Their book is about Princess Diana. We'll be back to continue our conversation after a short break. You're listening to Nancy's Bookshelf on North State Public Radio. I'm Nancy Wigman. I'm Nancy Wigman, and you're listening to Nancy's Bookshelf on North State Public Radio. I'm back with my two guests who have co-authored a book about Princess Diana. It's all about the hair. Now, Richard, I want to ask you to describe the cover for us, because I know you had selected that picture. And that picture has a story. Richard, what's the story behind that picture on the cover of your book?
The picture, this was actually in Thailand, an official visit to Thailand. And usually, you know, when we went to countries, I try to find something quirky to do, like Japan was the white dress with the red suns. In Thailand, Diana says, what are we going to do? I said, orchids. That's the flower of Thailand. And she said, well, where are we going to get orchids? I said, leave it to me. So I spent an hour running around the Imperial Hotel in Bangkok, stealing flowers from the arrangements that I thought were very beautiful. Well, I wasn't stealing, I was borrowing, but anyway, they were very beautiful. So anyway, we swept her hair back to one side, and she was wearing a beautiful, shocking pink and purple one-shoulder dress, and we pinned the flowers. She'd never done it before, and it was very successful. And that was our tribute to Thailand. And I've just returned from Thailand, and I'm going back again in a few months. Just absolutely love Thailand.
Well, you know, this is kind of an aside, but when you talked about putting flowers in her hair, that's not something that's commonly done. And Fergie was an interesting character in the book. And do you want to say anything about Fergie?
Not a lot. Well, Diana was worried that she'd get backlash from Fergie regarding things in her hair. Because, I mean, if you remember, she got off the flight in Los Angeles with L.A. stuck in her hat, which I thought was, it wasn't classy, you know? So I said to the princess, don't worry about it. She probably won't even see it. But she was pretty upset that Diana looked so fabulous. But there was no stickers in her hair or anything at any time. We were always very classy and tasteful of anything that we put in her hair. So one time, you probably know that the big sapphire that she wears on the pearl choker.
Yes.
That was a brooch originally. Mm-hmm. And we were doing an event. So I said to her, why don't we do like your hair up in a chignon and we'll put that brooch in your hair. And she said, oh, great idea. Charles did not think it was a very good idea at all. He said, it can possibly fall out. I said, no, it won't fall out because I'll walk behind it in case it does. But anyway, it didn't happen. We I think there's a picture in the book with the Butler and Wilson star that I went down to Butler and Wilson and bought just a big diamond Diamante star thing. So we used that instead. But that's the sapphire and an escape.
This is my guest, Richard Dalton, and he was hairdresser to Diana, Princess of Wales. But this is an example of your creative problem solving, Richard. I just got such a kick out of the ways that you would be faced with something hairdressers usually aren't faced with, and you would come up with a solution to that. Like, you know, you put flowers and orchids in her hair, a brooch. But also,
well, the other one in Melbourne was the Queen Mary's Cabochard Emeralds. Mm-hmm. And Diana had been in this, you know, got some sun while she was out walking around looking for Renee. And she had a bit of sun down at the back. And she said, oh, I said, diamonds do tend to scratch on suntan. So why don't we do a headband? So we did a headband. And
yeah, now see, there's another example that something that was supposed to be worn around the neck, but her neck was sunburned. So he said, well, I'll rig it so that you can wear it on your across your forehead.
Yeah.
And
six inches thicker elastic.
Mm-hmm. And that's a term too. People maybe have missed that knicker elastic. You use that a lot, and we have photographs of the solutions to problems that you had, like how to use that necklace that hurt her neck. So you figured out a way she could still wear it.
Another one was the velvet band, and I think we were in Japan, and that was actually a watch from Saudi Arabia that was put on a velvet band, and she wore that in as a headband again with the Yuki dress, I think it was. Beautiful fortune pleating. That was beautiful. Some people say it's purple, some people say it's blue.
I say it's purple.
Well, I know it's dark navy blue, Miss Renee.
Richard and I argue about the color of this dress.
But, no, they were fun things to do.
Well, speaking of jewelry and necklaces, there's a photograph of Diana with this lovely dress that's low cut in the back, and she's wearing pearls.
Backwards.
So why was she wearing backwards pearls?
Well, she was going to see a movie called Back to the Future. And I just thought it would be a good idea because the back of the dress was very low cut. It was crushed velvet, like in a sort of deep burgundy color. And I said, well, why don't we put your pearls on the back and tie in a knot?
To see Back to the Future.
Back to the Future, but that originated from a friend of mine who had a restaurant in London, and she was very glamorous and always wore, you know, quirky things with her jewelry. So that was an homage to April, my dear friend, and we put it back. But anyway, the next day, Diana said, I could have killed you last night. And I said, why? She said, I forgot I had a knot in the back of my pearls, and I sat back in the cinema, and I thought it nearly broke my spine. I said, well, I do apologize.
You might explain that these were long. It was a very long string of pearls.
It was long
enough that you could tie a knot in it, and that knot was right in her back while she was sitting.
Yeah, I knotted it in the back there. So, but as I say, we did lots of things like the black and red glove with the black and red dress.
Yeah, now we might mention that each glove was not black and red. One glove was red and one glove was black.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, two pairs of gloves. I had to run around London to find them. Yeah, no, that was fun.
Well, now, there's a photograph in your book where Diana is holding her head down. She's wearing a tiara and she has her head down, and the press thought, oh, she must be tired. She's got her head down. But that wasn't why she had her head down. Why?
No, because these were early days. I think we were in Australia. Yes, we were in Australia. It was Melbourne.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it used to hurt her head because it was just, nobody had adjusted it for herself. You know, tiaras are, you know, difficult to deal with. You don't just go out there, oh, hang on, I forgot my tiara. And you have to really work it into the hair. And on that occasion, we knew that it hurt her. So I was waiting on her coming back from a function in Melbourne because we were going to do a photo shoot. So she's walking through the door. She rips the tiara off her head and said, Richard, do something with that because it's killing me. I went, no, we're supposed to be doing a photo shoot. She can't. I've got a headache. So she gave the tiara to me, which I think is something like well over 2 million.
Yeah, because she had a couple of tiaras, and one was from her family, Spencer tiara.
But yeah, this the Spencer, was... And this is the Cambridge tiara. Cambridge, not tiara. So anyway, I thought, well, I've got to go and fix it. So I went to my room with the tiara, and I put it on my head. So and then I adjusted it with my famous knicker elastic again.
I might spell that word for in case people want. What's he saying? K-N-I-C-K-E-R, knicker tape.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's actually what Grandma used to keep her knickers up with.
Uh-huh. That's right. Because I asked a friend of mine as I was reading the book, I said, have you ever heard of knicker tape? And he said, oh, it must be what women used. And I said, yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so how did you solve the problem of this tiara that was giving her a headache?
I just put it on and adjusted the elastic and then tied it, and she never complained again. It was obviously far too tight. And
no, you put it on your head, Richard, not hers.
Yeah, you were experimenting with your own head.
With my own head.
Your own head. You.
But I can tell you that tiara with the pearls does rattle. Oh, my God. No wonder she had you know, it constantly, when the head's moving, it's just rattle, rattle, rattle all the time. So, but that was the remedy for that, and You know, I said to Renee last time we were together, I said, I wonder if the knicker elastic is still in the tiara that Lady Princess Catherine wears.
My guests are co-authors of the book, It's All About the Hair, My Decade with Diana, Her Royal Highness, Princess of Wales. And there are two authors. You hear two voices. The Scottish accent is is Richard Dalton, who spent a decade with Lady Diana. And the other voice is Renee Plant, who has a museum dedicated to Princess Diana. Now, Richard, you did a lot of traveling because Lady Diana and Charles traveled a lot. So you had to be prepared under whatever circumstances you were confronted with to be able to fix her hair. So what was your travel equipment, if I want to call it that?
We had her personal stuff like hair dryer, brushes, combs, product that we use, shampoo and hairspray. And the hairspray we used to use was L'Oreal's L-Net, which is, you know, very good hairspray. You can still buy it today. But the L-Net was the most important thing. So we had several cans of that. They all went in a box, and that was traveled with us wherever we went.
Well, I remember in college we had these fancy hairdos, and I would step out the door, and with the humidity where I was, it would just... And so you had to be prepared for whatever the climate was.
Yeah, you had to adjust it to the climate. That was, very important that we knew. Well, at least I knew where I was going. but I knew sort of 6 months to a year in advance that I would be, you know, with the princess either in, well, Europe, all over. I think every country in Europe we went to. Japan, Thailand, West Africa. That was a hot one.
And so if it's hot and humid.
Oh, very humid. Especially in Nigeria, it was hot. And we were on Her Majesty's yacht, and we were parked on the River Niger, which was, I think, 95 degrees. And all the jellyfish went up the air conditioning in the yacht, so it was hot on board, and I did have to travel with a fan, as one does. And, it was hysterical that all these jellyfish were up inside the air conditioning.
So you had to be prepared for really dry, because if central heating, then you get static. And so you had to adjust to whatever climate you were presented with when you were traveling. Yeah. But, you know, speaking of travel, now you just mentioned the royal yacht, and that was very convenient. But the travel, some of these countries were, it's just hard to imagine the wealth that it took to create some of these facilities, some of these accommodations that the royal family had, and you were right along with them.
Some of the palaces in Saudi Arabia were just unreal.
And even the airplane, my gosh, I was looking at a photograph of this. It was supposed to be a room on an airplane. I thought, no, this looks like a room in a luxury hotel. It's so huge. Oh,
yes, that was coming back from, I think, Emirates. I mean, it was before Dubai was Dubai. And we flew back. There was eight of our immediate entourage, and I don't know how many cabin attendants, but it was quite an experience, and it was a private 747.
And the food, I mean, champagne and caviar, and of course,
I'd already consumed a large can of at the palace, a large can of beluga, waiting for the princess.
So you're traveling in luxury, and people mistook you for a security, part of her security guard. Why would they think that? Why would they think you were part of Diana's security?
Well, I just wore a regular, lounge suit with white shirt, tie, and tried not to look like a hairdresser, so whatever a hairdresser looks like. And
Movie with Warren Beatty, so I guess if you carried around a hairdryer, they'd say, oh, yeah, he's the hairdresser. But you dressed like a security guard, so you probably got more respect that way.
Well, Terrence Donovan, the first time I met him, he said, the hairdresser, she's got her own hairdresser. And I said, yeah, I know. He's late. I said, no, he's not. And he said, well, he's not here. I said, yes, he is. And I said, I'm the hairdresser.
I remember that scene.
Yeah. Yeah, and he said, you don't look like a hairdresser. I said, you don't look like a photographer. So after that, Terrence and I became really good friends. Yeah.
Well, you had an opportunity to, you spent so much time with her. You learned so much about her, but you never said a word. She knew she could trust you.
Well,
and
really,
we, as the public, I will never forget Charles's answer when they were being interviewed and said, are you in love? And
yep.
She said,
don't go there with me.
And she said, yes. And you tell us, yes, she was in love with him.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember Charles's
and he said,
answer.
Whatever love is.
Whatever in love means.
Means, yeah.
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 And that's just heartbreaking.
Very much.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll never forget that when I heard him say that. I said, what is he going on about now?
Mm-hmm.
But it was ridiculous.
On a happier note, Diana, I mentioned, was, from what you tell us, she was deeply in love with Charles. But she also, here's a quote from her. Diana says, I love your mother. And this is because she went to visit your parents in Scotland. And she remarked afterwards, your mother thinks I'm already queen because she, what did your mother call Princess Diana?
Diana and Charles were sitting in the back of the car. They stopped at my village, which is fully 25 people in high season. And the school had turned out, because obviously in the village, gossip gets around. And my mother said I was crazy, that Diana wasn't going to stop. But anyway, they stopped at the car, and I'm telling the farmhand to keep the cows in because the Prince of Wales and Princess Diana's arriving. And then suddenly a friend said, the prince wants to talk to you. And he rolled the window down and shouted, Richard. And so I went over. Diana said, which one is your mum and dad? I said, the one with the Westie, because I love West Highland Terrier dogs.
Oh, yeah.
So he came over and said, I taught my mother to curtsy. She thought I was crazy that weekend. But I said, you've got to learn to curtsy.
And when we're reading it, we don't know, well, did his mother actually curtsy? Because it sounded like she didn't want to curtsy.
She didn't curtsy, no, because, you don't do that when you go out shopping in Scotland. And anyway, she curtsied and said, oh, your majesty, it's so wonderful to meet you. And Diana was laughing when we got back to Kensington Palace that night, and she said, love your mother, she already thinks I'm queen.
But, because that's not the proper address for a princess.
No, that's for the queen.
Well, now, another question.
Yeah.
Diana wanted you to ask your mother a question for her. Do you know what question?
Too soon.
Yeah. And when I look at pictures of her, I think she looks beautiful because I know somebody who is bulimic, and she looks really unhealthily thin, skinny, thin. But the pictures of Diana, I thought, oh, she's perfect. But I kept waiting for you to mention bulimia, and the word is only in your book one time. Did it ever come up when you were talking to Diana, other than the fact that Diana says, does your mother think I'm too thin? And your mother said, yes.
Some Scottish porridge. And Diana said, oh, I think I'd like that. So we never got around to making it. She used to, binge on sweets and chocolates and stuff when I was doing her hair. And, obviously it was, at that time, it wasn't something you address.
Yeah.
Unless she spoke to me about it, I couldn't say to her. She would have to give the conversation, whatever. But unless I was asked the question, you never question senior members of the royal family.
And this, can I chime in here? Because I feel this is one of the parts of Diana that is so vulnerable, that when she did finally come public with this attribute of herself and this condition, it really opened her up to the world to really make her feel like people could connect with her and relate to her on such a level that had never been done by royal people before. And I think that was that window of like, oh, she's just like us. She's vulnerable. She really took that, you know, like put herself on the map like that in around the world just to be open.
Yeah. Yeah. After a break, my two guests and I will be back to resume our conversation about Princess Diana. You're listening to Nancy's Bookshelf on North State Public Radio. I'm Nancy Wigman. I'm Nancy Wigman, and you're listening to Nancy's Bookshelf on North State Public Radio. I'm back with my two guests, Renee Plant, who is curator of the Princess Diana Museum, and Richard Dalton, who was Diana's hairdresser for a decade. Well, Diana was always such a kind person, thoughtful. She wrote thank you cards for people, and you mentioned that when she... Here we're a little 12-year-old, and she looks you right in the eye when she shakes your hand. And so that's one thing I took away from your book, is how kind this person was. And I felt bad when Charles, or a couple of times when Charles really got mad at her. And one of them was because she loved to dance.
Oh, yeah.
And why did he get mad at her for that? I mean, not other than the fact that she danced with John Travolta, but that was ballroom dancing. But she went on stage because she loved to dance. And
with John Sleep, yeah.
And why did her husband get mad at her?
Well, again, you know, he felt one doesn't expect the Princess of Wales to go on the stage as an actress.
Because she didn't tell him ahead of time. She was going to surprise him.
I was the only one that knew. Yeah. I was the only one that knew. With Wayne Sleep. Mm-hmm. And I knew she was doing this. And I thought, Mum, if it gets out and she finds out somebody said it should go straight to me, because I was the only one that knew. So I kept my mouth shut, as always.
Yeah. Well, when was your last royal tour with Diana and Charles, Richard?
I think that was, Budapest. Mm-hmm. No, I don't think it was Budapest. It was somewhere, you know, that was
Africa.
Near Russia.
Yeah.
Well, I'll just ask when it was, because you tell us it was May of 1990, and it was after that. You came to the United States. Why did you come to United States?
Well, I always wanted to come to the United States, and... That's the day I always say that I gave up diamond tiaras for Pace because I came to do Miss America. Mm-hmm. Because these times I was involved with one of the sponsors that did Miss America. So I came down and it was Carolyn Sapp was Miss America who won that year with Miss Hawaii. And that's why I came to the States. And then, of course...
Well, also, I mentioned when your last tour was with Charles and Diana, because it seemed like you were getting uncomfortable being with the two of them because they were not getting along.
Yes.
And so I think that would also be an incentive to leave your position with Diana.
Yeah. you know, it was stressful. I mean, I didn't realize how stressful the whole 10 years had been until it was over. But she said to me one day, she says, I think you want your freedom back. I said, probably, I think you might be right. But she was very unhappy. And, you know, she was, you know, it stressed and whatever. You know, it wasn't fair to her. And anyway, I came to America. Actually, I arrived on September the 11th. And my decade was 9/11. I was in New York doing all the runway fashion shows for Fashion Week. And I think that week we had, or myself and my team had 17 fashion shows. And then the towers fell after our seventh. And I was having a morning in my hotel room, and my friend Eileen called from Manchester. Said, "What's going on?" She said, "The plane's gone into the tower." I said, "What are you talking about?" And it was exactly 9:10 that she called me, and it took 10 days to get out. That was anyway. That was my 10th anniversary of coming to America.
And let me remind listeners again that my two guests are co-authors of a memoir. It's all about the hair. My Decade with Diana, Her Royal Highness, Princess of Wales. And this is Richard Dalton, who is telling us about the time he spent with Diana, the decade with Diana. And then Renee Plant, who established a museum, a virtual museum, with memorabilia from Diana. And I wanted to ask, Richard, what do you remember most about Diana?
Just a stunningly beautiful she actually was. And I was fortunate enough to be with her practically every morning in 10 years. But her skin tones, everything about her, she was stunningly beautiful and more beautiful than the camera ever captured. And again, I was fortunate enough to be in that position to, you know, say to myself, my God, am I really doing this? But she was, in real life, a wonderful person inside out and beautiful, so beautiful.
Well, she was loved by so many people. I was a fan of hers, too, and even more so now after reading your book, Richard. Mm-hmm. And, Renee, what, I mean, you were motivated to create a museum, and you have some awards of your own for your working with nonprofit children, raising funds for children's charities. And so you continue, I think, this influence that Diana had on your life. So what concluding remarks would you like us to know, Renee?
Yeah, for me, I was really fortunate, like growing up, as you know, like while she was alive. And I feel like younger generations really didn't get to see that real essence of who she was in action while she had that, you know, worldwide global appeal for compassion, humanitarianism, giving back, doing things for others, expecting nothing in return. And, you know, it's been, you know, because I've worked with children myself for the past 17 years, I have a preschool here in Los Angeles, that I really understand the importance of the future, you know, generations. And so for me, I really wanted to create the museum as a way for people to really understand her life and her legacy, and just what an impact she had around the world. And we're actually getting ready to go on a global tour. I'm in the works right now. Kind of can't talk about it too much, but my goal is to have all these pieces. It's going to start in California first.
So you because might, that's where you and Richard are both in California now.
Yeah, but so it's going to be local, which is really exciting. Next year, September, October, we'll be out. And people will actually be able to come and see all these incredible pieces for themselves. But, if you can't make it to California or wherever we go, you can actually go to the, you know, princessdianamuseum.org and see all these pieces. We've got, you know, amazing jewelry, handbags, clothing pieces from when she was a child that are very, very rare, that, you know, only, you know, her brother or, you know, her sons would have. And all these pieces have been, you know, acquired over years from auctions and private collectors, but I've put them all in one place to really, really represent her real life and her legacy through all the years of, especially with her boys. I feel like now that they're not talking, those moments where she's with her kids as a mother, you know, are really important. So, yeah, just giving back.
There are so many interesting chapters in the book that we didn't even touch on. And, for example, her role as a mother, we somewhat mentioned in passing when she took William to Australia with her. But you can just see photographs of her with her children and know how much she loved being a mother and her role as a mother. Now, it's kind of an awkward subject, but sometimes people wondered, okay, William was definitely Charles and Diana's son, but some people wonder, well, what about Harry? Was he really Charles's son?
Because he's got the red hair.
That was, again, the taboo thing with her, because Harry was, I think, probably one or two when she had a liaison with Hewitt. I mean, that's absolute nonsense.
Harry had already been born. You said he was a couple of years old. And people
I used to cut her brother's hair, Charles Allthorpe. And he was he was probably about 18 at the time. And his hair was bright red. You know, and Lady Sarah's hair is bright red, or was bright red. Unfortunately, we're all wearing the same color at the moment. Lady Jane was more Diana's coloring, where Diana obviously loved having highlights, and then but red hair is dispensed side of the family, and
That rumor that was blown up by the media. They were always, of course, pounding her. Like I say, Diana was famous, but she was a person that was, I think, a good role model for thoughtfulness and kindness, that we could all be inspired by her. So thank you for writing this book. Let me tell people again the title of your book. It's All About the Hair: My Decade with Diana, Her Royal Highness, Princess of Wales. The co-authors are Renee Plant and Richard Dalton. Thank you.
I'd like to thank you guys for inviting me, and I really enjoyed chatting with you.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you very much indeed.
And next we have a segment we call The Writer's Room, and it features writers from around the North State.
Visiting Baudelaire. Walking miles through ancient air, skinny streets, my head filled with his clouds like a tick fills itself with blood. I butter my baguette, length of a baton, as I stroll to his grave. Everyone has given me pre-trip tourist tips, where to go, what to see, every friend who's been seduced by Paris, as if we're all in love with the same woman, arguing over what's her best part, how long did she invite us to stay deep inside. I'm here for a week. My goal, to visit Baudelaire's grave, and finally I've arrived, but with nothing to give except an unfinished poem, which I place beside the dried yellow roses, discolored pack of Gilloise, another visitor's engraved leather notebook. There's no place for me to sit and talk with him. The sun burns a hole through his magnificent clouds. Even though he's dead, I'm too shy to tell him how I feel. Kim Dower.
Secret Fox. First we find the scat, curly-shaped, crammed with manzanita seeds, dried out. Gray Fox dumped it on a rock to cry, "This piece of earth is my turf." The small canines, invisible, hidden by wind, sheltered in echoes from the rumbling creek. But even a critter who knows how to hide can goof. It stands behind us, sees us first, feels stunned, takes no more steps, slinks backwards in shadow. It doesn't yip. Nose twitches, cat ears perk up. Then we turn, discover our orange and tan-faced visitor. We grab cameras, knock water bottles to the ground. Their clank startles the fox. That's all. It's gone back into the wind. Somewhere a quail laughs. Paw belts.
Sunset The author retires. Anyone can watch it now, raised up from the silty floor of a government archive and floated online for free. It flickers on demand. An anodyne reel if stumbled upon, the overture to merriment composed for upright piano. The reel rolls to frame 289, mark 3 minutes and 1 second. Famous author stands in holiday mood, waving at camera from uppermost deck, not quite laughing at danger. German warning in the morning rag adds the tang of adventure. Captain Turner stands beside, face all unawares, straight as a plumb bob line, pulling taut towards the molten middle. Stetsoned, stony, seasoned. A slight variation of the same demeanor dozens witnessed as he paced the bridge wing, ship becoming submarine, a life vest his sole concession. Cool as a sea cucumber. But the ocean spit him out, set gently in the dock at Kinsale, the Lord's own scapegoat. Author was last spotted arm in arm with love, receding in a stranger's stateroom, shutting themselves inside to wait with grim acceptance the watery knock at the door, that swell guest who hastily dissolves an entire lifetime of ink. Cale Wiggins.
For more information on the writers you've just heard, go to mynspr.org and click on the poetry link.
You've been listening to Nancy's Bookshelf, a production of North State Public Radio. You can find this and other episodes of Nancy's Bookshelf on our website, mynspr.org.